Blog Talk Radio.
Employee participation rates in Connecticut from 1998 to 2012.
making it increasingly difficult for workers to prepare for their retirement. In 2010, 50% of Connecticut workers, that's 740,000 residents, were not participating in an employer-provided retirement plan. We want to make sure that after a lifetime of work, every future retiree has the opportunity to retire with adequate income and dignity, said Karen Friedman, Executive Vice President and Policy Director of the Pension Rights Center. Council 4 is urging legislators to pass SB 54, which would create a public retirement plan for all workers. The bill currently awaits action by the Senate. So I hope that happens. And let's see, American workers are headed for retirement insecurity. For years, this is off the blog, for years, ultra-conservative politicians have been peddling the lie that 401Ks, type defined contribution retirement plans, provide as much security as traditional pensions. Meanwhile, AFSCME working members and retirees argue that these politicians are imperiling the future of millions of seniors. A recent front page Washington Post article, Fiscal Trouble Ahead for Most Future Retirees, provides more evidence of what AFSCME has known for a long time. Defined contribution plans are one reason the security retirement of many future retirees is in jeopardy. For the first time since the New Deal, the article says, a majority of Americans are headed toward a retirement in which they will be financially worse off than their parents. A U.S. Senate report says our nation faces a retirement savings deficit of more than $6 trillion. About $57,000 per household. Other studies indicate that more than half of the Americans 30 and older won't be prepared for retirement. That's partially because those with 401k plans will end up dipping into their savings for a variety of purposes, from health care expenses to college tuition. This is the first time that Americans are going to be relatively worse off than their parents or grandparents in old age, said Teresa Gilliard-Ducey, director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analyst at the New School for Social Research, in the article. The Great Recession played a major role in undercutting retirement security and destroying 40% of America's personal wealth. On top of that, many employers have shifted from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans. But rather than seeking ways to increase retirement security, many politicians are focused solely on the nation's long-term debt and are willing to sacrifice Social Security and Medicare to fix it. That's why AFSCME members across the country, from New York to California, have been fighting attacks on Social Security. As U.S. Senator Tom Harkin said in a recent hearing on the issue, we need to do more to help American families cope with this looming crisis. And here's something else that we should be interested in. Attack on workers' rights continue in Indiana. It's political payback time in Indiana. Corporate-backed legislators, long at war with the state's public school employees, are taking another shot at them by attempting to undermine their union strength. On Tuesday, a Republican-controlled House Education Committee voted along party lines for a bill making it illegal for a school employer to honor an employee's voluntary request to have their union dues deducted from his or her paycheck. In effect, the measure, introduced by Representative Jeff Thompson, would require that an employee write a dues check directly to the union, a burden that is unnecessary, unfair, and meant to weaken union solidarity. The Star Press is an editorial. In an editorial opposing the legislation, concluded the bill only serves to punish teachers. Last night, the bill was revised so it applies only to voluntary payroll deductions that employees make to their unions for political purposes, and which will now affect only certified employees, that's teachers. While this rewrite sidesteps the fight over union dues deductions, it is still an effort to silence the voice of employees acting through their unions to improve education in Indiana. The campaign against workers' rights is nothing more than a continuation of blatant right-wing attacks on public and private sector unions. Last year, Indiana passed the so-called Right to Work for Less law that prohibited collecting union dues at private companies. In 2011, the state's lawmakers restricted teachers' collective bargaining rights. Thompson's bill, as originally proposed and later amended, is another example of a never-ending effort by Republicans to do away with nearly every single worker's right in Indiana that was created and supported by both Republicans and Democrats over a century, says Dave Warwick, executive director of Indiana AFSCME Council 62, which represents approximately 1,600 school district employees who would be affected by the legislation. Warwick is also an AFSCME International Vice President, adds, "This is a classic case of simply bullying by Republicans who were elected to improve education for the children of Indiana. Instead, they've decided to punish teachers, school workers, and our unions. Not one penny will be saved for education by outlawing the voluntary collection of union dues for these workers. This is about politics, not public policy," says the Indiana State AFL-CIO, which is urging members to call their legislators to stop the bill's progress through the legislature. And here's a good one. The right wing loves its loopholes. This is by Carl Stark. This was actually written in February. It says, next Friday, federal budget cuts known as the sequestration are scheduled to take effect, and they already have, folks, forcing nearly $85 billion in drastic, immediate budget cuts to government programs. Of course, these cuts could easily have been avoided. In fact, they were designed to be so unfathomable that Congress would take balanced action on deficit reduction. That didn't work. But like a good Hitchcock movie, Congress is full of surprises. Budget hawks who have spent the last 2 years clamoring about the need for deficit reduction are finally seeing the real effects of those cuts. Massive job losses, more than a million of them. Instead of working to prevent these deep cuts by passing deficit reduction measures that share the burden equally, some in Congress are more dedicated to protecting outrageous tax loopholes for wealthy and corporations than they are to protect jobs. With an economy that is still staggering, what could be more important than preventing job losses? Let's take a look at the right's favorite loopholes. Here's one. Deferring overseas income. Multinational corporations don't have to pay U.S. income taxes on profits they earn overseas until they transfer those earnings back to the U.S. In effect, these companies just keep their profits outside America in overseas tax havens, allowing them to avoid paying taxes indefinitely. These companies can even transfer domestic profits to these havens and avoid paying taxes even on income they've earned here in America. A staggering 83% of the top 100 publicly traded companies had tax haven units in 2009, including General Electric, Google, and Pfizer, costing the federal government, $100 billion each year. Deducting punitive damages. When corporations have to pay punitive damages to litigation from destructive or sometimes illegal activity, they can write these damages off as ordinary and unnecessary business expenses. When Exxon was hit with the $1.1 billion in punitive damages resulting from the Alaska oil spill settlement, the actual cost to the oil company was, listen to this, a meager $524 million after taxes. Gee, that's because they wrote it all off. Deducting corporate jets and yachts. Corporations can deduct some of the costs for their private jets, and at a better rate than even commercial airline companies are able to do. yacht owners get similar perks. Lower tax rates for Wall Street bankers. For decades, the federal government has taxed income earned through investments much lower than the income working families earn through regular wages. This allows Wall Street bankers who earn all their income through investments to pay tax rates that are often 20% lower than the average. Mitt Romney, for example, paid a tax rate of 14% of income.
Hello?
In 2011.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, Larry. It's Lila. How are you?
Good, good.
I was just reading how the right wing loves its loopholes on Council for our blog.
They're good at exploiting them, aren't they?
Oh, they sure are. I was just wanted to review it for myself and the listeners because we're not talking so much about the sequester anymore, and I like to make sure that people remember it. It's not hurting so much right now, but I can see that the way it's laid out, it's going to hurt more down the road, I think.
This whole thing is a setup to cut more services, cut more jobs.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah.
Weaken unions. I mean, it is part of a master plan.
It sure is. And it's kind of like it's starting gradually, and then it's going to escalate.
Which is really frightening to envision.
It really is. It's very frightening. So how are things going for our union here in Connecticut, would you say? I know we have that retirement bill before the legislature, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately it didn't. It was never got called, so we'll have to be back again next year. We're trying to push a state-administered plan for every worker, and great bill. It sets up an insured fund.
Yeah.
Compete against the profiteers from the private sector who charge these outrageous fees. And
yep.
The bill cleared committees, and it was waiting on the Senate calendar to be called, but unfortunately it didn't get called, and they conclude business tonight, so it looks like we're not going to get it done.
When you say it didn't get called, what happened?
They keep too much till the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a number of bills waiting to be brought out by a particular legislator to be debated and voted on. And the bill just didn't get called up for a vote, for a debate and a vote.
So
it had passed through its relevant committees,
uh-huh.
And was awaiting action on the Senate floor, and they just didn't take it up. Senators were pushing other bills that were, more of their pet projects, I guess.
Let me ask you this. So you have to start from square one and go again and go back to committee?
Could be, yeah.
Boy.
We'll have to see what happens next year. I mean, we're prepared to do that. This is really important legislation, Lila. It's really important. 401Ks are not retirement plans.
No.
All the studies are indicating that workers are going to retire with less and less in the way of assets. They're lucky if they even have, if they have Social Security. So we're going to get this done one way or another, and we'll redouble our efforts next year. But the answer to your question would be yes.
Yeah, I sure hope so, because I think it's a great plan and a very good one for Connecticut workers.
We do too.
Go ahead, Larry.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, there was only one good bill that they actually put through, I think, this entire year. All right, that I know of, and that was the GMO labeling bill,
Right, that is a good bill, except I think it takes a while to go into effect.
But, it was the only one that they actually did. The most ridiculous one is this thing with the, that they put through with the Sandy Hook, Freedom of Information.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
That was absurd, really, for them to cut that, for them to do that. And it just leads to more and more and more censorship.
Not that we don't sympathize with the victims and the families of what happened at Sandy Hook. I mean,
but it just ensures that the answers won't be that the questions won't be answered.
I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's too many questions around that one.
People
kind of interesting to see how the tragedy and Sandy Hook really bookended the session, because it started with the gun legislation.
Right.
And kind of, not precisely, but it ended with the debate over that bill you're talking about,
which I know
a lot of journalists were and journalistic organizations were opposed to.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important that the press have access to things and that people have access. I mean, it doesn't minimize the pain and the horrible thing that happened at Sandy Hook, but it's better to be an open society than a closed one.
Oh.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from on that, and I do think it's, you know, when you think about some of the stuff that the Bush people have pulled and the Republicans have pulled in terms of repressing information, I do get uncomfortable when Democrats are doing that too.
I feel very uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, and you're right. No disrespect to families have endured just inexplicable pain that none of us can come close to feeling, but. Anything that makes it easier for information to be repressed or suppressed, I should say, is.
I just feel that I won't get on this too much, but I just feel that those people are being used, and by the Obama administration and gun control legislation and all this other crap that they're trying to push down your throat. And
I don't know about that. I mean, they're certainly. Many of those parents have, I'm not going to say that because I think that they've gone through this unspeakable tragedy. They made a decision they didn't have to lobby, and I would have understood that, but I do think they've shown some extraordinary courage in saying, we have to do things differently with gun control.
I certainly understand where they're coming from, but I think we have to be careful not to be reactionary and to think about things in a clearer way. I'm a person who happened to have been home for a few days when that happened, and I was crying the whole time. It was terrible. And, I work in a school myself, so...
Right,
I know. It must have been horror. I just can't imagine the horror and the terror and everything that went with that. But I think we also have to be very, very careful that we don't react and be reactionary to these kinds of tragedies that happen to limit our constitutional rights and the ability of the press to have access to things they need to have access to. Because there are terrible things that do happen, but the public needs to know. And they need to be able to make good decisions about it. You can't have things closed off. It's just not a good precedent, I don't think.
No, and it's no different than they got the big 911 memorial now, and they're telling people that they got to pay to see it. All right, I don't know if you saw this, but
no, it was voluntary.
There's no voluntariness to it. They're not. It's a mandatory $7 donation.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else after that is voluntary. And you got to wonder, is that all going to Silverstein's repayment fund or what,
Well, it's, again, I think that the parents have they've chosen to act on their grief by trying to be spokespeople for public policy, and I do respect that,
Oh, so do I. I really do, and I can understand why they're trying to do something. I'm just not sure in the end it's really the right thing. That's all I'm saying.
Right. No, fair point. And, look, one thing when Newtown happened, and I think we've got to be wary of it, and it's why I give the parents who have been lobbying at the Capitol, for example, on gun control credit, because all these millions of dollars poured in donations and, teddy bears and toys and ribbons. And, it makes the outside world feel good. It makes the person making a contribution. But if you want to do something, then we probably need to reexamine the access to guns and mental health care. And, it would be good if people sort of worked and lobbied in a grassroots fashion for legislation that matters rather than, make contributions and donations. And, that was sort of my problem with the Newtown thing is that millions of dollars are piling up. It's not going to bring those children back. But
right.
I'd rather people, took it upon themselves to lobby or campaign finance or whatever. You know?
When they collected $225 million and the Red Cross said, we're not giving all that money away. You know, that's
right.
Too much money to give away to the survivors, you know?
Yep.
And you remember that? You know,
yeah,
it was like
they hoarded the money anyway. You're right.
The money, and they're doing the same thing with this one, even though they said, I guess they cleared the association there that was getting all the money, but it's all the same. It's the same kind of rigmarole, you know. Where they as soon as the millions come in, everybody starts paying themselves salaries. You know what I mean?
Well, I would like to see things be less reactionary and more thoughtful. That's all.
I mean,
I certainly think we need to take a look at what happens with the mentally ill and what kind of help they get. I think that's a very important thing, but that can't be done in a month or in one session of the legislature and pass a bill.
Mm-hmm.
I think we really need to take a look at what happens on the local level for mental health care.
Yeah,
I don't think in a lot of places that it's very good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I'd love to see some of the money go there.
I got a
help
question.
People.
I got a big question for you though, Larry. And then, you know,
fire away.
I'm curious. Now, I know the unions are into this big time, but you know, I mean, after the last, I mean, what was there? There was two bridges that just collapsed.
That was awful.
This month.
Good point.
And nobody's still not putting money into the infrastructures. I mean, what is going on, Larry? And how can we? I don't know who do we or how do we push this issue to rebuild? You know?
Oh, look, I'm with you on that, and I think that the building trades, building and construction trades union, our union, everybody should be pushing more vocally for this. And you know, I know we're all stretched thin, but I'm really glad you brought it up because you guys are, you know, faithful subscribers to the news clips I put out. And a couple weeks ago I had put out a clip, and it was the same day, and I juxtaposed them purposely because one clip was about the state of bridges in Connecticut, and then that same set of news clips had an article about Apple's tax dodge.
Okay.
Where, you know, they've ducked, you know, billions of dollars through their offshore and and so to answer your question, I mean, you know, where's the outrage? And that's why, you know, I don't want to insult the families of the Newtown victims here, but or the people who contributed, but you know, instead of donating a teddy bear to, you know, or $100 to that, you know, I wish people would fight for this stuff, because by letting legislators and Congress off the hook on this, and by letting corporations and the rich off the hook, this is why we're not investing in infrastructure. You know, this is why we don't have money to, it's not because public employees have pensions or health care. You know, we're cutting them. You know, we have this crazy inequitable tax structure that allows companies like Apple to dodge paying, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes that would go toward a fair, more just society, that would repair bridges, that would rebuild our schools, that would pave our roads. That's the problem.
I mean, we're just starving this country, and we're destroying the infrastructure.
Yeah. And we're not building, you know, there's like 10 or 11 bridges in Connecticut that are considered structurally unsound.
Really?
Yeah. I'm sure there are thousands across this country because we don't do bridge repair.
There are thousands of them.
You know, this July we're going to celebrate the 30th, not celebrate, that's the wrong word, but we will mark the 30th anniversary of the Mianis River bridge collapse in Greenwich. Why are we waiting for these disasters to happen? Because, you know, because we're too busy accommodating the corporate extortionists who steal their way to great profit at our expense. So that's my answer to your question.
Yeah.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
I think you're right, and I think I also don't particularly care for a lot of our foreign policy. I don't think it's necessary to be fighting wars all around the world.
Nope.
And I'd like to see our military people come home, and when they come home, I want them taken care of. I'm against
Yeah.
But I think that the people should be taken care of because they were sent by our country to go there. And if they come back sick or they come back injured, they need to be taken care of in the right way.
Well, I was just reading.
It's graceful that we
don't. And maybe you've seen this as well. But our fearless leader, Obama, and the Homeland Security has just labeled all incoming homecoming veterans as potential terrorists.
Right?
And that's because they're constitutionalists. And there's a litmus test out there now, which is really frightening, Larry, really frightening, that's been passed out to the military, that will you attack or will you shoot American citizens? All right? And guess what? 40% have said, yes, we will.
Mm.
All right?
So
if that doesn't scare the hell out of you, Larry, I don't know what does. All right?
No, but, well, you know, quite honestly, there's like hundreds of things that a lot of me going on in this country.
But, you know, it's like to label these guys terrorists who are coming home. Potential.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know,
I just don't think they should be treated so poorly, even though I'm against the fact that they go in the first place. I don't think they should come back and be unemployed, and I don't think they should come back and not have any opportunity, and I don't think they should come back and be sick and not be treated. It would be best for our country if they were taken care of and became contributing citizens.
Yep.
But somehow our government doesn't seem to think that way so much.
But again,
anymore.
You know, and I don't want to, you know, I don't. It's a little unfair to, you know, point the finger at Obama in that, you know, Bush and his cronies pushed through, you know, Homeland Security and Patriot Acts, and you know, we can't kid ourselves that a lot of that stuff was designed to enable the government to repress domestic. Opposition, including, you know, that from trade unions. So,
right.
You know, we go out on a picket line, we're potentially
terrorists. Are you a terrorist?
Yeah. No. So, you know, I do the you know, the original fault certainly does lie with the Bush administration, but it's been perpetuated obviously under this current administration too. So.
It's really frightening, and you would think that wouldn't be the case, but it definitely is, and we.
Yep. Yep.
It's not lightening up. And, you know, there's so many problems I see, Larry, lately. And, you know, it's just not getting any better. And I really, really, really hope that we can focus our efforts more again this year on trying to do something with the unions, trying to push this issue. But, you know, the more we do, And I have to say our audiences are growing and growing, but it's still minimal next to what's happening out there as far as the censorship, not only of union issues but of anything. I mean, you saw what happened recently with the censorship of the mainstream media, even. All right,
mm-hmm.
You know, and Obama land, Obama is pushing this, you know, to censor the media. I mean, it's a frightening issue.
That's
and,
a bit scary to me.
Yeah, and we're finding.
What do you think about the Bradley Manning situation?
Oh yeah, that's another one. Yeah, sure, the mm-hmm. WikiLeaks. But we're finding that even NPR, okay, National Petroleum Radio now, has been classified as probably as mainstream sickening as NBC, ABC, and CBS.
Well, they caved into the Koch brothers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure they did.
That was a sad day.
And you got nothing. I mean, right now up here in this neck of the woods, right here, there are three radio stations, and only one of those stations, okay, or actually four radio stations, all of three of them are NPR, and one of them is a music station, you know? And it's pretty sad.
Unless you get like a Cirrus Radio or one of those.
Yeah, unless you get satellite radio.
Satellite radio, you don't get anything.
Terrestrial radio, you get three entire area, the entire
northwest
corner is saturated by NPR. You know, nobody even listens to their radios anymore up here. You know,
because you get the same thing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would close loopholes in the current equal pay laws that make it easier for employers to discriminate against women by paying them less? I think that's really important because women only make 77 cents for every dollar that a man makes.
Right. You know, and again, when you talk about this is something our unions have been fighting for years, and, you know, to make sure in you know, what you have now are proposals that would actually pervert that process and make it even worse than it is. But, yes, we need to have, and this is why we, you know, need to have responsible legislators, and that's why we need to have unions fighting it, because at least if you're a woman and you're in a union, you're going to earn about 30% more than a woman who doesn't have a union card. So a little bit of good news, you know, there, and, you know, it's a shameless self-promotion on my part. But, yeah, we need
keep
legislation.
Keep on promoting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but again, all of this good stuff that we're trying to do is absolutely stalled. You know, it's we are running, you know, I hate to sound bleak. I mean, we're just running in place right now.
Oh, boy. You know, I wasn't aware that that single mothers are and moms are breadwinners in 40% of the homes with kids. That's what the title of this article says. That was
right.
I didn't realize there were that many.
And Fox News was lampooning it and saying what a terrible thing that is.
And
does that surprise you?
No.
You know? And on the one hand, that's really good news. It shows that strides are being made, but it also shows that, you know, underneath those statistics, there's a lot of economic dislocation going on.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is that, and, you know, I personally know people, you know, who work in government, women who have been hired at positions at a lower salary than their predecessors. The private sector is notorious for that. Women are breadwinners, but their chances of earning what they really deserve, comparable to what a male would earn, the system's totally skewed.
Yeah, and I'm glad that the union is trying to do something about that.
Well, we've pushed pay equity legislation. We actually got pay equity legislation passed for state employees many years ago, and, you know, and we would love to see it for everybody. But we had to do it because administrative and clerical workers were being paid a fraction of their male counterparts who were doing, and many of the administrative clerical workers, if you go to a social services office, they're doing almost as much as any caseworker. Yet they're chronically.
On parity now, or with?
Well, it's, you know, now there's no money to fund equalizing salaries, but we've gotten some. We've been able to increase some people's salaries over the years, and, you know, and I guess my point is that the only way you're going to do that is if you have an advocate. So that means either having a lawyer who would sue, or else having a union that would actually fight to represent you, and that's what we do, is that we make sure that there isn't that kind of pay inequity in women's jobs. But, you know, again, the Republican right, the teabaggers, they're all out to destroy the Ledbetter Act, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. They want to destroy unions. You know, there are a lot of powerful moneyed interests that want to get rid of everything we're fighting for.
What did you think about the IRS issue? Where they were tagging anything with the Tea Party in its label for these nonprofits. Well, you know, the new Obama scandal.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's a tremendous political component to this.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're naive if we think otherwise. You know, the Republicans are looking to paralyze the administration. And I'll be honest with you, and I don't want to sound like I'm being dismissive of the question. I'd rather people cared more about the fact that the National Labor Relations Board has been crippled because of the Republicans than we pay attention to, you know, the IRS potential, you know, allegedly.
I agree with you there too.
I really do. I mean, things aren't running in this country because of this stuff. And
it's not as juicy, you know.
Right. Right, that's my point, yeah.
Well, everybody has to pay taxes to the IRS, so everybody, in every April, everybody trembles,
right.
to, you know, so we can all identify.
And I'm sure they've squeezed a lot of people. My suspicion is it's not, you know, it's not ideologically biased. So.
I mean, the Republicans did it when they were in power, and the Democrats have done it when since they've been.
It sure doesn't make it right. There's no question about it.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Good point.
I mean, ever since Nixon, and before, but Nixon was probably the most famous of the guys who used the IRS to punish his opponent.
But it's a sad situation.
But I don't know, Larry. I admire you guys. I admire what you do, and I just wish that somehow we could make a stronger statement. But I see it waning. I see it waning everywhere. And I do too.
I am in complete agreement with you. I had coffee with a friend of mine who's a union leader. He's about to retire and very media savvy person. And we were talking about that fact because we had this protest. A bunch of us were protesting in front of the Current last week because the Koch brothers want to buy the Tribune company. The protests are nice, but they don't do anything. And we admitted that. I mean, what we need to do is actually have a capital strategy approach. You know, union pension funds are, you know, part of these hedge funds that fund these transactions. You know,
right.
we need to be somehow amassing our strength as consumers, as investors, and putting pressure on the powers that be to do the right thing. And until we get to that point, then we're just going to have scattered, noisy protests that don't go anywhere.
I agree with you 100%. And the only way that's effective is if you touch people financially. That's
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
yeah.
what changed
right.
Apartheid in South Africa
yep.
by them being boycotted and by being hurt financially. That's what you have to do.
And you know, in Monsanto, I mean, Monsanto is getting crippled now because of a worldwide boycott against them. But, you know,
it hurts their pocket.
This is the kind of thing that bothers us so much because we're constantly bringing these issues up on, on the GMOs and so on. But, I mean, here's this legislation, this signature legislation, in Connecticut, and it got zero, almost zero news coverage, okay?
It was mentioned.
I noticed that.
Yeah, and it was absolutely staggering that it didn't. Here you had a worldwide worldwide protest of 500 or 600 major cities around the world, all right?
All at the same time.
Against Monsanto on the same day, all right? Not one word of it mentioned in any of the mainstream media, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that was so amazing about it is there was no centralized organization of it.
It's totally done on Facebooks and everything.
And on a personal one-to-one
right.
level. I think because the people who are against genetically modified food really at a very gut level and are very emotionally tied to that issue. And it affects your very basic thing. It affects your food.
Don't underestimate this. And we've been talking about this through the half hour. It's just that the press is a corporate entity,
mm-hmm.
And they're not going to cover these stories. You know, they're not going to cover these stories. And
of course they're not. Because their major sponsors are Monsanto and Kellogg's
right.
and every other corporation, General Mills, and that promote and use the genetically modified.
But so many countries in Europe have said they won't allow
right,
it.
They won't allow anything in Monsanto in Europe anymore. They've banned
right.
them, burned their crops, they've kicked them out, they've shut down their offices.
But I think the thing that bothers me the most is that I think eventually they'll be drummed out of this country too. And they'll be forced. I think they're going to be forced.
Yeah, but they just gave them the whole immunity. Congress just gave them full immunity.
I just wanted to mention that. And I think that was done because they see the handwriting on the wall. They were given immunity for any damages that they caused to people.
And cross-pollination and crops and everything else.
Ruin all the farmers' crops.
Monsanto is destroyed. the food system, the food chain in this country. And even now, no country in the world is importing American wheat or corn because it's all contaminated. Right?
That's
so,
pretty
sad. And you don't hear the news talking about this, do you?
We're becoming a third world country, and that's because of the corporations having the power.
I
mentioned Facebook a minute ago, and I know you spoke to Larry earlier, and you're on Facebook, Larry, with Council 4.
We have Council 4, so if people want to like us, that's much appreciated. We're trying to build an audience, trying to get the advocacy piece of what we do moving. So, yeah, you go to Facebook and search COUNCIL, numeral 4, AFSCME, AFSCME, and you'll find us.
Are you texting people with things that come
out? We do. We have a text number. You think I would know it? It's on our website, but we do periodically send texts. We're in the process. We do it through our national union, and we're kind of in the process of developing our own. And pretty soon, I hope to have a phone app developed for Council 4 too, so people can just immediately take action.
I think that'll be great because I work in a school and I go to the teacher's room, and a lot of the staff is a little bit younger than I am.
Yeah.
And they are all on their phones and all texting.
It's amazing. I mean, I don't necessarily like it, but I understand it, that that's just the way of the world we live in right now.
Certainly is. I mean, certainly all the kids are that way, but a lot of the staff, to me, they're kids. They're all, they're under 40.
Yeah, no, we're dinosaurs.
That's exactly right. And I'm thinking
roaming the fields. No offense, but I'm with you too. We're all the same age. So.
I want to tell you though that I got when you posted that that new page, I shared it and liked it. When did you post it? Last weekend, I think it was.
Yeah, a week ago. So I appreciate that. Yeah.
But I appreciate it. It looked good.
Well, we're trying. It's the way of the world, whether I like it or not. I'm still a guy that likes to pick up a newspaper,
it's hard to find them.
But the face looked good. I just hope that I know, Larry. I'm kind of an optimist here, even though I throw pessimism around. But I just keep hoping that we can keep promoting this and keep trying to get people to understand what the hell is going on. And I think, really think a lot of people are, but, you just got to, I mean, shows like we're doing, I mean, there are not that many of them. And you don't hear that much. Even that guy, what's his name on MSNBC, they cut him out. They cut him down to a 1 weekend a month.
Ed Schultz. I used to enjoy listening to him.
He was the only union guy they had.
Right. He's an
important union voice, and they cut him down two nights a week or something, two nights a month, something like that. You know?
Scary stuff.
Do you know what happened to him or anything? Do you have any of the?
I don't.
I do.
Well, hopefully, we can talk about that next month. I'd like to find out.
No, I can tell you what happened to it. His ratings were well. It's not his ratings, but. The MSNBC sponsorship was getting ticked off at his ranting on unions, okay? And he supposedly said, they wanted to cut his show down to a couple of hours a week, and he said he voluntarily accepted it so that he could do more documentaries and more work with the unions, all right? Which was a crock of crap. Okay, what they did is they cut him out. He was on four nights a week, five nights a week, and they chopped him down to like 3 days a week. Then they changed his hours, and then they did everything they could to destroy this guy and destroy the union.
Yep.
You know, his union backing.
Yeah.
And then after he did that whole expose out in Wisconsin during the Wisconsin,
he did a good job on that.
You know, then they really
fantastic. Yeah.
And that's when that's when they chopped them down to like two days a week,
Yeah.
Or two nights. What was it? One Saturday, I think he's on some obscure time on Saturday night or something, you know, and they just destroyed him. So
that's scary, and that's MSNBC, which is supposedly the liberal.
Yeah, but they're not. They were the guys that actually canned Phil Donahue, you know, before the Iraq War. I mean, this guy. I mean, they are completely. They were extremely right wing at that time, and then all of a sudden they found a market and they decided to go left wing. Okay.
Yep.
And because Fox took over the right wing market, you know.
Yeah.
And but then they were so afraid of losing all their sponsors that they dropped anybody that was a real liberal and threw phony people, you know, like Matt, what's his name, Chris Matthews, okay, and
mm-hmm.
guys like that who could do the White House whitewash speak, you know what I mean?
Yep. Hey guys, I gotta run, so.
We thank you very much for being on, and I urge our listeners to go to your Facebook.
Thanks.
And I look forward to going there too.
Good, good, and we'll be talking more. So I look forward to it.
Keep up the fight on pensions for everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Leo. Thanks, Lila.
You're welcome. Okay. Good night.
Good night, Larry.
That's Larry Dorman, from Public Affairs Coordinator from Council 4 in New Britain, Connecticut.
Yeah.
Talking to us.
And we there's a lot to be thankful for these unions.
If the wages of union people come up, the wages of everybody come up.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes for a better life for everyone. But when they start pressuring unions out, you know, they want to go back to the 1900s. You know, when sweatshops and where 5-year-old kids were working.
Yeah, no,
they could pay them less.
I feel bad for Larry in a way because, you know, he's got to.
He's got a real battle.
He's got a real battle on his hands, and you know, in a little way that we can help, you know, the unions, we try, but it's like, you know, we just got killed. It's like when they took our radio station away, and made it into.
No, not our station. They took the show away.
Well, yeah, I mean, our radio station was Q103,
right,
in this area, and we owned it, but I mean,
yeah.
We unfortunately the owner sold it to NPR, and now there's nothing, there's absolutely nothing, there's no independent voice in this area, there's no independent voice in all of Connecticut.
It's not only that. What we lost in our community was a community radio station.
Yeah.
So there's no radio station in our community that represents people
or
advertising local businesses or anything like that.
I mean, we
let you know when there's a storm coming and your power's off or whatever.
I mean,
we don't have anything like that anymore.
Totally destroyed, and now we get,
that's a real loss because. It kind of kept people abreast of what was happening in the community.
And it was a local identity, proud.
People connected to that.
Exactly.
It was really an excellent, excellent station.
But
they had a great morning show, and
our program was extremely popular, and we were doing it every Tuesday night there, and it was the only two hours every Tuesday, and it was listened to by hundreds of thousands of people everywhere in the Poughkeepsie market. We were tops in the Poughkeepsie market. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And which was kind of big since that's New York State and around here. But it was like, you know, it became a threat to the establishment.
Well, and the guy could rent it out and make more money and not do any work.
And
so now we have three NPR stations all saying the same thing, which is too bad.
To the joke. You know,
it's just the way it is.
But that's the nightmare that we're in, and the United States.
And I'm sure it's that way in other small towns.
No, it wouldn't surprise
me, because I had heard that NPR was spreading its wings all over the place.
Oh yeah, they are. They're just like a plague. They're like a cancer. Yeah, pretending to be
liberal,
and they're backed by Koch brothers and all the other conservative schmucks. that are out there. There's nothing liberal or nothing even independent about NPR. I don't know. We got a few more minutes, and we're. Here's a good one. I can't stand the fact that we, Lila and I, not being hypocrites, we have shopped at Walmart, but God, I wish that we could not have to shop there. It says Walmart Gap refused to sign the Bangladesh safety pact. Following the tragic building collapse that killed more than 13,000 Bangladeshi garment workers and recent fires that claimed the lives of more than 400 Bangladeshi clothing workers, more than 40 clothing retailers have signed on to the Accord on Building and Fire Safety. But two of the major retailers that count on low-wage Bangladeshi workers to make the clothes they sell have refused. Today, Walmart and Gap announced they would develop their own non-binding safety code and turned their backs on the accord developed by the international and Bangladeshi unions, retailers, and other groups, groups with first-hand knowledge of what needed to for worker safety and of the deadly consequences of inaction. According to the fashion blog Fashionista, the Walmart Gap plan probably won't be of any legally binding nature, since that's what Gap objected to in the Bangladesh safety record. But Gap and Walmart are no doubt trying to quell consumer backlash. It will likely backfire if this new plan doesn't place enough legal responsibility on retail shoulders. In joint statements, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win, the two labor federations, said they are deeply concerned about Walmart and Gap's plan to move forward with a corporate-controlled, non-binding process of adopting building safety standards in Bangladesh. This is a matter of life or death, quite simply. Non-binding is just not good enough. Karen Strickenbarker and Kaufman, executive directors of the corporate watchdog, someofus.org, told Fashionista there is a serious gap in Gap's credibility if it says it is only wants to sign an agreement that is not legally binding. In an effort to lend an air of legitimacy to their plans to develop their own safety accord, Walmart and Gap have asked former U.S. Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell and former Senator Olympia Snowe to serve as independent facilitators, but said the AFL-CIO and Change to Win. While former Senator George Mitchell and Olympia Snowe are both respected for their ability to forge compromises, we cannot afford to compromise the lives of Bangladeshi workers. We are determined to get this process right, and we will express our concerns to both former senators and ask that they not participate in undermining the ongoing and more productive process led by all industrial all and UNI Global Labor Federations. So, folks, support them. Do what you can. Try to boycott Walmart. We're going to try to boycott Walmart and the Gap, all right? And keep away from those damn companies. And support unions wherever you can. And with that, we're going to say goodnight. And we thank Larry Doran for joining us and the ASME Union. And, wish them all the luck in the world.
Good night, folks. Thanks for being with us. And stay tuned tomorrow night for Leo as he goes into the esoteric realm. Have a good night and talk to you next week. Good night, folks.